Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. Sitting across the way from me this morning is Mr. Matt Rush, as he is here with the Fairfield Rural Fire Department, one of the volunteers. Who's the chief down there now? Is it still Dave Vaughn?
David Vaughn, yep. And okay. Then Chris Miller is the assistant chief.
David has been chief for, good grief, how long has David been chief now of the Fairfield Rural Fire Department?
Well, this is my 16th year, and he was the one that put me on when I 16 years ago. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to talk about all kinds of different fire protection tips and try to make people not burn their houses down whenever. See now, folks are turning on their heaters, and that's always worrisome when folks do that. You get to all kinds of things, but we're going to talk all kinds of fire prevention techniques, as well as I'm going to ask you first. Tell me about the entry into the Christmas parade, because that you won, by the way. Congratulations, right?
Best use of lights.
Best use of lights. Is that second year in a row?
I'm not sure, Bruce. Usually this weekend I am out of town, and so I've not been with the parade for 7 or 8 years.
Did you go?
I did, and I walked along and passed out candy. I really enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, it was a fast-paced parade, seemed like. And
they took off.
Yeah.
Did you see the front two vehicles? The front two vehicles, well, the veterans with the honor guard were walking pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then they had the Hummer, the policeman's Hummer behind them, and I don't remember who was next, but they just, I think it was the Fairfield City Fire Department, they just zoomed through.
Yeah.
And there was maybe three blocks or so, but by the time it got to me, two or three blocks of a blank space just between the next group. That was fun.
Well, the Kiwanis, you know, take part of that. They do a great job, and we're appreciative of it. And, you know, the fire department's always been a tradition whenever I was a kid at the fire department, not even on the fire department. I remember doing floats and so forth. And we always have fun with it. We don't do a float hardly anymore. We stuck with the Mill Shoals old sea gray fire truck.
That's a great looking fire truck.
It's kept up nice. The Mill Shoals firemen, they had it kept it inside. But anyway, we used to put lights on it, and then we went to the adding music to the tune of lights, and got a couple guys that enjoy doing that type of thing, and got a guy that has a DJ business, and we use his sound system for it, and we have a good time doing it.
That's why you pull the gigantic generator behind it.
That is correct, Bruce.
How many volts does it take to run that truck?
Well, that'd have been a question for Chris, but I do know that we have two humongous speakers, to blare the music. The generator, matter of fact, somebody asked, is that generator even on? It was quiet, you know, and that's what we want. And then,
You don't want it drowning out your music.
Right. And then behind the generator was Estill Stewart, always drives the mule, and that's kind of our quote-unquote support vehicle with all the candy and
something
happens. So.
Tell me a little bit, since we're talking about the Christmas parade, tell me a little bit about the acquisition. How did you get that Mill Shoals truck? Because when it still got Mill Shoals painted on the side.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, I probably hear it every year, but I forget. I was sitting there thinking, you know, the Mill Shoals, they don't have a fire department anymore, I guess.
Yeah, so, and I'm not going to get the year right because I didn't.
You weren't there.
I was there when it happened, but I wasn't, I'll get the year mixed up. But in early 2000, the Mill Shoals trustees, which is the governing board of the fire department, came to us and asked us if we'd be interested in annexing in the Mill Shoals Fire Protection District into the Fairfield Rural.
Uh-huh.
We already provided mutual aid to them and worked together like we do with the other organizations,
sure,
you know, the other departments here in town and county. And so it went before a vote, and once the vote was taken, it passed. And so then that became – technically, that's still – it's now a Fairfield Rural Fire Protection District, but we still call it the Mill Shoals area.
Okay.
And if you pass through town, we built a new fire station there. You could say catty corner from the old Ray Joe's.
Right.
And so anyway, we took it over, and with their help, some of their firemen came with us, Stan Adams, Derek Smothers, Chris Wheeler. We got a lot of good guys that came on our department and still actually are very involved with our department today. And
what kind of equipment did they have for
them? Well, they had a pumper and a tanker and this old sea gray fire truck sitting back in the corner. I don't know. It's about a block and a half north where the new fire station is where mm-hmm. the old fire station was at. And so one of the first things the trustees wanted to do was to, you know, get everything, make sure everything was up to
code,
and they wanted to get us a new building down there just to have more room and to do some training, and because we meet twice a month. And so back
down there as well as in Fairfield?
We rotate. Okay. Yes, sir. And we had a fundraiser down there a couple months ago, or last month, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the Seagrave was back in the corner, and they got it, put a couple batteries in it.
Had they not been running it?
It hadn't been used. It's an open cab, you know, and yeah. So it had not been, you know, they may have kept it started to, you know, keep things going, but I'm not aware with that. But anyway, they started it up, and,
wow.
And it's a
open cab.
Open cab, old Detroit diesel in it.
Mm-hmm.
But we just left everything original. We've not done anything to it. We get it out for parades. In years past, the Kiwanis have asked us to take it down to the when Santa and Mrs. Claus
right.
is at the Festival of Lights.
Right.
They've asked us to bring it down there. I'm glad to do that. It's just it's a community truck, and we want to keep it that way. It's got its own door down at Mill Shoals. We keep it in the station down at Mill Shoals.
I wonder how long it hadn't been used. How long it had been out of service.
Yeah, I'm just not sure, Bruce. Somebody from Mill Shoals might be able to. Stan, I know Stan Adams could tell us,
yeah.
And he's kind of.
Stan would know.
Stan would know, but we just wanted to keep it original. There's been some interest, not from the guys.
Now say, has anybody ever have anybody offered you to buy?
There
the
has place? Been some interest in it, but I can tell you that our guys and our trustees were not interested in getting rid of it. It's a piece of history we want to keep down in Mill Shoals.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What's the offer? How much is it?
I don't know. You know, people just and sometimes talking.
They're just checking.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know there's some
because it's in great shape.
It's in great shape, and there's some people that collect things like that around. You know, but that's just something we want to keep in the town of Mill Shoals and to show our support of the older
farmer. You never
farmer.
Know, though. I mean, what if they offer like several hundred thousand dollars to you, though, Matt?
Well, Bruce, I guess that could happen, but. But I tell you what, our loyalty to the town of Mill Shoals is pretty
true.
Deep, and so we want to.
How far does the Fairfield Rural Fire Protection District go now?
Well,
counting Mill Shoals in.
Yeah, so our south line would be there's an old gas plant before you get to the town of Springerton. The old FS plant right there is the line, and then Enfield comes up and takes
right
care
below
of that.
The hill, right?
Right below the hill.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And then when we took over Mill Shoals or provided them some assistance, we now have the interstate as part of our district too, which can be a interesting.
That can be a curse.
It's interesting. You know, I mean, we cover from around the 105, 106, all the way to the 117. So we have about 11 miles of I-64 in our district.
Do you get called out on the cause whenever there's a wreck or something that you guys do get called out for rescue, right?
Yeah. Car fire, wrecks, just first responder. We go to the interstate. I don't know what our average is, but two or three times a month.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that you had that much of the interstate down there.
Yeah, Wayne City has the rest of it in Wayne County, and we work together in that 104 to 106 area we work together on. But yeah, we were just there last week for a gentleman hit a guardrail.
I remember that.
And
that was a bad one, right?
Didn't well, he walked away from
he
it.
He fell asleep?
I believe that was what they said, yes. But, you know, our one thing, we just never know what we're getting into when we go to the interstate. So that's why it's important. If it's one thing we could talk about. It was when you're traveling on the interstate, kind of keep in the back of your mind where you're at. I'm guilty of not knowing what milepost I'm at.
Really?
And so, you know, if you see a wreck, you pick up the phone and say, well, I'm such and such. We try to get it as close as you can so we know where we're going.
I got to tell you, there are probably people – and I'm guilty of it too, Matt, from time to time. If I'm on a long drive, you're just going to zone out.
Yeah.
And you're looking at the road in front of you, and you know that you've got 4 or 5 hours that you're going to be in the car. And I'll look up, and I'll be darned, I'm a little closer than, say, if I'm driving to Louisville, I'm almost to Corydon or something like that.
And yeah. Yeah, it's probably been 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was on a Friday night. We got a call to the interstate where a car had the gentleman didn't stop. He just called into 911 and said he had seen a wreck on the interstate. The car had spun out and went down the embankment. And so we respond, and as Chris has said before on the radio, we respond with several thousand.
You got several vehicles.
Several thousand dollars of equipment.
Yeah.
And that night we actually had two trucks from Fairfield and two trucks from Mill Shoals looking for this car because they said it went down the embankment. And the ambulance service was with us, sheriff's office was with us, and we looked and looked. Never did find it. Thank goodness somebody at Chuck Wagon Charlie's down at Burnt Prairie was alert, knew what was going on, and called that car, drove on to Burnt Prairie and parked at the gas station. It hit a deer.
Oh.
But it was nice.
So he had gone down to the abatement and able came to get back, himself back
yes,
out.
But we didn't know that. Yeah, so we spent, you know, 30 minutes looking. Yeah. So, you know, if you do see a wreck, if you have time to stop and just kind of give us a good idea where it's
at. Safer anyway to stop to make the phone call, right?
I would think so.
Well, yeah, one would think. I got Matt Rush here. We're with the Fairfield Rural Fire Department. We're talking all kinds of fire protection. It's just the tips and it's just something the folks need to remember every so often. We'll be back here on the Bruce Dickey Show on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM back after these.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round the corner, could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight you dare. Five will get you 10, old Mackey's back in town. Now you hear about Louis Miller, he disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie Heath spins just like a shell. Could it be our boy's done something rash?
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. My guest across the way is a Fairfield Rural Fire Department member, Matt Rush, and he's been with them 15 years. We've been hanging out with the rural firemen. How's that possible? Were you like 10?
Hey, well, I joined whenever I was a junior firefighter. We have a program for junior firemen, and so I joined that when I was 16, and I'd been around it for quite a while. My dad had been on the department since 1984, I believe, or 85.
How many kids do you get involved at that young age? I mean, how many do you have junior firemen going right now?
None right now, actually. We have usually two or three is a manageable number.
Yeah.
There are certain things you can't do as a junior fireman, such as going to a burning building or drive a truck.
You're too young to have the CDL, I guess.
Yeah, it's just a good idea to, you know, for hands-on experience, and we always – I enjoyed it because I'd been around it for quite a while, but, I mean, you know, washing hose, cleaning trucks, you know, it's just a place to hang out to. And
you do you mentioned you have the meetings twice a month. How much training is involved in these?
Usually the first meeting of the month is just a business meeting, and then we might do a little small engines or, you know, make sure that everything starts up, runs, check everything in. And then the last meeting of the month is our drill, which is usually a two or three-hour exercise. Last drill, if you notice, when you drive by the fire station, we're not forming a junkyard there. We've got three cars. Actually, we had four cars we cut apart, flipped them over on top of each other, put some dummy victims in there, and then cut the cars apart to get the victims out.
No, you basically worked on your Jaws of Life techniques
That's right. Yeah, the whole rescue truck, ropes, airbags to raise the cars up if somebody's trapped underneath them, Jaws of Life cutters.
Well, that's the thing, Matt. Like I said, I've got Matt Rush here. That's the thing, Matt. The job of the Fairfield Volunteer Fireman has changed quite a bit in the 15 years since you've been doing it, hasn't it?
Yeah, when I first started, we relied upon the city to run our rescue.
Yeah.
And after we mentioned in the previous segment about taking over the interstate, we felt that it might be necessary we get our own tools and learn that process because, you know, it's always in the back of our mind if there's a major wreck.
Yeah.
It's going to take us and the city fire department and possibly even Wayne City as well. So we went forth and used volunteer funds to buy some rescue tools and built a rescue truck, actually, in Chris's shop there.
You made that out of you just got like an Explorer or something, right?
And then, no, that's what we started out. We started out with just an old four-door Chevy ton truck.
Okay.
And then we were actually at a going to look at a farm sale in New Harmony, and there was a rescue bed off of New Harmony, Indiana's fire truck.
Oh, really?
And so we bought that rescue bed and bought an old a line crew truck from up around Alney,
mm-hmm.
and painted it.
Made your own.
Made our own. Kind of a custom deal where we, got a lot of guys that are welders or fabricators or engineers, and we just did different things to the truck that we felt was necessary to make it what we needed, and works out well.
How much equipment do you have on the rescue truck? When you take the rescue truck out, You don't normally take the pumpers or anything out unless you need to, I guess, or unless somebody says there's a fire. Otherwise,
yeah, well, no, on a rescue run, we roll the rescue truck first, and then a pumper rolls from either Fairfield or Mill Shoals.
Oh, is that right?
Just because you don't know what you're getting. It gets back to the previous segment of we don't know what we're rolling up on. If it's a semi hauling some type of fuel or some type of hazard. Also, when a car wrecks, the chances of a gas tank getting punctured is pretty good.
Yeah.
And so,
does the rescue truck have the stuff that you pour on the interstate and all that kind of stuff?
Oil dry.
To keep the fire from
coming? Yep.
Really?
And so the rescue truck has anything from brooms and shovels to clean up stuff to jaws of life to cutters. We were also fortunate enough 4 or 5 years ago to get a grant from the Wayne County Farm Bureau to buy a grain rescue tube.
Oh, really?
And it's something we don't really want to talk about and think about, but it's reality.
Something that you have to have.
We're in a rural agriculture community, and this time of year when farmers are hauling grain, if something goes wrong, farmers could go in and check the bin.
That's a bad thing.
It does not take very long at all.
And, the trouble is, Matt, that's happened more than once around here.
It has happened in Wayne County. That's correct. And so the Farm Bureau was gracious enough to donate some money to us, or they actually went out and bought them, I believe. And we have a grain rescue tube at Rural and at the Mill Shoals Station, too.
So how does that work?
It's a three-piece deal. And
you drop down the top?
You drop down the top, and it comes in three pieces, and you latch it all together. Then you take a vacuum and suck out the grain around the victim and pull them out that way, because it's just a matter of
in rescuing a victim, whether they're already gone or not,
right?
It's tremendously unsafe to even go down there and get them, and that's what this is all about.
Yeah, it's we're concerned about the victim, but our safety is also on the top of our mind.
Right.
And, if that ever happens, it's going to be a multi-department deal.
Sure.
Because, we've all been through training. You got to cut flaps in the grain bin to relieve pressure. And as a farmer myself, that's the last thing you want to think about is a bunch of grain on the ground.
But
the worst scenario is there's somebody inside.
Yeah.
So that's a minimal. If we got to clean up grain afterwards, we're glad to do that. But anyway, the rescue truck has that, and ladders, pry bars. We also carry some breathing apparatuses on there in case we would come upon something we need to
have you own air. Have you come up on you've been putting in the work to get the rescue equipment all to be ready for anything. Have you guys in the past few years come up on anything that you didn't have that did kind of throw a curveball at you?
Well, you always want more, and that's what we have our fundraisers for.
And
we always buy things. I can't recall of a idea in the past or a scenario in the past couple of years we've not had something.
Yeah.
But there's always that latest and greatest gadget or tool that you want to buy.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. The GPS and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that truck also carries onboard GPS because we're very fortunate to have AeriVac to have a base in Evansville and Mount Vernon.
So the AeriVac uses your truck to center in on.
We can give them coordinates,
okay.
and so it's not unusual for us to land the helicopter right on scene.
How about that? We were planning on talking quite a bit today about fire prevention. It's that time of year, and where folks are doing. Folks are doing things inside their house that they may not normally do, and and there's things that folks need to remember, aren't there?
Yeah, as far as cooking or Christmas trees or whatever, there's safety first. If you have a grease fire, the number one thing you don't want to use is water.
Yeah,
it'll just make it worse. And if you think you can put it out, please, if you can do it quickly, that's fine. But if not, just get out of the house, call 911, and we'll be there as quick as possible.
Well, that's the thing. You see a lot of when you read the newspapers, and you see a lot of problems from folks trying to put out their own fire, and they get overcome.
Yeah, it doesn't take very long at all, and your adrenaline's rushing. And you know, we go to the grade schools and talk to the kids, and we tell them that to get out of the house and go to a central location. And I would emphasize that for anybody. That way, when we pull up, we know that everybody's out of the house, because that's our number one thing, is to make sure. Make sure everybody is out of the house. And I know that we all have valuable things in our house.
I need my scrapbooks.
Yeah,
there.
Can't live without. But that's the worst thing you can do, is to go back in, because fires, they grow exponentially. And if you leave a door open or has a way to get air, then it's really going to grow fast. So if you do leave the house, try to shut the door behind you, because that will keep the fire from growing at a faster pace.
No kidding. And I see, I understand that in a room situation, but I never really thought about leaving the house or trying to shut the house down, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any way you can keep fire from getting air, it's going to limit how fast you can grow.
But isn't that we're not going to get a backdraft situation or something when you guys start axing down the door, right?
Well, that's what we are trained to do. When we pull up on scene and your house is on fire, Bruce, you may think...
I guess I won't care.
Well, you may think that we're just...
destructive?
Taking our time, but we're actually taking a visual of what's going on, where the fire's at. We may go up and cut a hole in the roof before we even go in the house to vent.
Yeah.
And that way the fire would go straight up instead of going throughout the house. So just because we pull up and we're not instantly inside the house doesn't mean we don't care, because that's completely opposite.
Have you ever had anybody complain?
No, well,
I would think that if my house is on fire, or if you were come up on a house that's on fire, and you guys get there, and yeah, you might take a little bit of time to survey the scene, let's call it.
Right.
I would think that'd be okay.
Well,
if one of you is going to go climb on the roof.
In this day and age with technology and cell phone videos, you know, sometimes we don't always get the whole picture. You can video something and it may not be the entire picture.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I'm getting at.
You probably see that more than I would, because you guys are on websites and see what other fire departments are doing.
Yeah. So if we pull up and we're dragging hose out and waiting for, you know, because we don't want to, we enter the house with two people, two in, two out. It's our motto.
Oh, is that right?
So you don't go in by yourself. And if I'm fighting a fire with you, Bruce, and my air pack goes out and yours didn't, we both got to go out.
Yeah.
And so I can't stress enough how lucky we are to have the departments around here, because we're a rural department, you know, and so.
How many firefighters are there now in the rural department?
There's about 25 guys on the roster, but we have the city here that we provide mutual aid with. The past 6 or 8 months, we've been on automatic mutual aid, to where when it was so hot this summer, if they had a structure fire or we had a structure fire, we both automatically responded. But we've got Wayne City and Jeff and Sisney and Orchardville, and then we've even worked with Albion and Enfield.
You know, that's the thing, and I think, Matt, that might be something that folks don't realize, just how hot it can get when you guys are in all that equipment. And the relief, you got to have relief pretty quickly, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. You know, a tank of air will depend on how fit you are, which I'm not real fit. So, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, I'm out of air. And
I got to tell you, if you and I were going into the house, that tank of air, it ain't lasting long.
It ain't going to last for long as it is.
No.
But so it's nice to have they call it a RIT team, Rapid Intervention.
Uh-huh.
To stand by in case something would happen, you know, the worst case scenario. The ambulance service here in Wayne County is really good to come stand by. Sometimes they're needed just for a place to get in and get out of the heat or the weather. But you know, sometimes they just don't do anything at all. But it's nice to have them on standby in case something would go wrong.
How often have you been having to? How often will you send for the helicopter? Who makes the call to send for a helicopter?
Dispatch. That's the first place. So when you call in with a problem.
All right, I'm driving down the highway. I'm like the guy, I hit a deer.
Yep.
Like the guy last week or 2 weeks ago you were talking about. I've hit a deer, but my car's crunched. I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to do anything. You guys dispatch to me.
Yep.
You guys are coming down to Route 64. Do you get you find me first before you send for the helicopter, I guess? Or
no, there? There's a list of seven criteria, and anywhere from an infant to a high-speed crash to an ATV crash to a like I said, there's seven of them. And if you meet those seven criteria when you call in, if you tell them you've been ejected or
yeah. –
or there's a list of seven things or eight.
Yeah.
And if that is in those seven or eight things, they instantly dispatch the fire rescue and the EMTs.
Is that right?
And then they – turn around and pick up a phone that has a direct line to AirVac and ask for a helicopter.
No kidding. Over to Mount Vernon.
Well, whichever the closest one is. You know, maybe Evansville or Marion or wherever. But, yeah, so – and then AirVac would come. When we get on scene, we would have radio communication with them. If they are needed, they'll sit down. If they are not needed, they make a circle and they go back to their base. If they never sit down or we don't ever use them, nobody is charged.
Yeah.
They just log that as flight time. And we've talked to several of the AirVac staff, and that's what they want to do. They'd rather come and be needed than not needed and not be there.
How's the wonder what insurance people if they are brought into the process of the of the procedure, figuring out when because I mean yeah once that thing comes down the charge is going to hit
that's
and
right.
and somebody's going to the insurance company might say hey that's not necessary
yeah. Well, you know, they you got the golden hour. That's what we try to strive to
get. The first hour.
The first, you try to get you to a trauma center within the first hour.
Right.
And we're very blessed to have Fairfield Memorial here. But if we can land a helicopter and get you to a trauma center within that hour, it just increases the odds of for you.
And that's what we're all for.
That's exactly right.
I've got Matt Rush here with the Fairfield Rural Fire Department. We're talking all kinds of fire prevention tips. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that they do in the schools as well. As I was confused about some of the training. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. You are listening to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Back after these.
Satisfaction oozes from her pores. She keeps dreams on her feet, marble on her floor. Cocaine in her dresses, bars on her door. She keeps her back against the wall. Kevin got a little off track. Took a year off in college and he never went back. Now he smokes much too much, got a permanent headache. Deals dope out of Denny's, keeps a table in the back.
Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. My guest across the way, it is Fairfield Rural Fire Department, Matt Rush. And we've been talking about all kinds of different things. One of the things, and it's kind of late in the year for it now with the, it probably might have been a bigger problem last month, late last month than it is now, but field fires, those can get out of hand in a hurry, can't they? And you guys get called out on those, I presume, in November must have been called out quite a bit.
That's probably one of the, besides first responder calls, that's probably one of the larger call volumes we have is in field fires.
Really?
And
is it mainly from... Is it mainly from controlled fires that maybe if you're going to be burning, having a controlled burn, that you didn't call the dispatcher?
Yeah, that's one thing we stress. If you're going to burn something, call 842-2153, which is the non-emergency line up at the city police department, which is our 911 dispatcher. Let them know where you're at. Pretty well everywhere in the county has a 911 address now since we went to the enhanced 911.
Right.
Or let them know the nearest intersection you're at, and they will flag that on their system. And so if they get a call, they're going to know that Bruce Dickey's burning a brush pile or burning leaves. Now, in town, you know, I've heard Chief Kyle Clazier say on your talk show, it's not necessary to call when you're burning leaves in town. But
yeah, they'll see it.
Right. Out in the rural area, you know, just let them know. And if it does get out of hand, call them back and let them know. But otherwise, passerby is going to call in if you're burning a brush pile or a field off, and then we are en route with
you got to go.
We got to go, and even if we think it might be a controlled burn, you never know. And so we take, you know, we got guys that take off work or leave their job to go, and so just a phone call, a courtesy call, and let them know what's going on.
What the? When do they get out of control? I mean, if what happens for one of those to get out of control? Because most of the folks who are burning, whether in town or out in the country, usually try to keep a straight head and know exactly how they're doing. But do they always, I guess, is my question.
Well, it just seems like whenever you light a fire, the wind instantly changes direction.
It really does, doesn't it?
I mean, I've experienced that myself. Seems like as soon as you light that fire, it's just a matter of time before the wind changes direction.
Yeah.
And something we would stress, if call. It doesn't cost anything for us to come out. Probably the number one question we always get after we have the fire out is, well, what do I owe you? Well, you paid your tax bill, I hope, and that's where our money comes from.
Yeah.
If there's anything else you could do, we'd be come by and support one of our fundraisers.
Right.
But other than that, there's no charge for us to come out. So if you think something's getting out of control, please call before it does get out of control and causes
How bad a field? I mean, I guess you want to make sure that, of course, your field is has been harvested. But I'd kind of wait until the other ones around me have, too.
Yeah, common sense. You know, if you a drizzly day, or if you're going to burn a brush pile, a drizzly day would be a good day, or wait till the wind's out of the right direction. And you're right, Bruce. Once harvest is over, it'd be a lot better, because some of the worst fires I've ever seen as far as a field fire would be a wheat field.
Yeah.
Goes up in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
And
I saw one of those when I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
A firecracker. Yep. A bottle rocket.
Yep.
Burned a wheat field, though.
And then
That's no fun.
A soybean field, too, because there's actually oil inside those soybeans.
Oh, really?
And so once it gets cooking, it's a monster to put out, too.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
How about does a cornfield burn up pretty fast?
Cornfield will burn up too, yeah. But
people usually get those early in the year.
Yeah,
early in the season, the harvest season.
Yeah, so it's it's just important to know your surroundings and what you're dealing with and the wind direction and modern technology. You can look at the forecast and it forecasts wind speeds, you know, and so just use some common sense.
Common sense, you know. I gotta tell you, Matt, in most of the things that. The fire prevention tips, they, for the most part, are common sense, aren't they?
They are. You know, we talked about a while ago is to get out of the house, and we go to the school and try to talk to the kids about, you know, if there is a fire in the middle of the night, hopefully your smoke alarms are working, change the batteries twice a year.
Is it okay if I'm putting up my Christmas tree? And I want to put a few extra lights together at the back end of that thing. How many feet can I get that plug-in line going?
Well, Bruce, we know where you live at, and I believe there's a fireman across the road from you, so we'll just know where we'll just go ahead and log your address in the computer. But again, you know, don't overload your circuits, and if it trips the breaker once, don't be like Christmas Vacation and keep on going back and tripping it again. I mean, if it trips once, there's probably a reason why.
Again, Matt, now you're getting back into that common sense thing.
Yeah. But if the house would happen to catch on fire, stay low, crawl out. Don't, smoke's going to rise. But the smoke alarm is a big thing. I know that if somebody burns something, they go off, the first thing I do is go pop the battery out.
Yeah.
But they are there for a reason.
I got to tell you, a lot of times, though, those smoke alarms, it seems like after 6 months without changing the battery, they'll start making all these noises.
They'll start chirping.
Yeah. You can just take the battery out then, can't you?
You can, Bruce. And again, we'll be there. But and the carbon monoxide detector.
Tell me about the carbon monoxide
detectors. Well, there is a date on the back of them, I believe, that how long they are should be used
for. And they're
for.
Not battery operated. Those are just
some of them are and some of them aren't. Yeah, and so that's a silent killer. You know, if you don't have one of them in your house, which is required by law, I believe, you know, that could be something that could get you in the middle of the night and you never would know it. So that's a, you know, smoke you can see and smell, but carbon monoxide is something you cannot.
Well, that's right, and a lot of folks use the portable heaters.
That's right.
This time of year, and those things can generate that. Yep. They can generate all kinds of different gases that you may not realize.
Yeah, if you start feeling tired or dizzy or something, you know, get out of the house and call your local fire department. We all have testers. We can come and it's a sniffer, essentially, is what it is, a handheld thing, and we can tell what your readings are in your house.
Well, the bad deal is that happens quite a bit now as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, if they go off, you know, like I said, the worst thing you can do is not call us. Don't be embarrassed by calling the fire department. Because we want to help. That's what we all – we don't receive a paycheck, and so
you're there to help.
We're there to help. We're there to make people feel safer. And so if you're in question, call, and we'll do our best to help you.
When's the next fundraiser? You guys probably – your main one every year is around Easter, right?
Yeah, so we just completed it at Station 2, which is our Millshoals station. We had a pork chop dinner.
Okay.
And that was last month. We will probably have our fish fry the last part of March, first part of April.
I didn't know if you'd set the date yet for that.
I was not at the last meeting, so I am guilty of that.
Scofflaw.
That's right. That's right. It was the day before Thanksgiving, and I had to be out of town. But I would guess the last Friday in March would be a pretty good chance for us to have it. And, again, we'll cook up 850 pound of catfish.
When you were mentioning that you go into the schools, how often are you able to go into the schools? And who does? Does David go, or does Chris, or you, or what?
Whoever has a chance.
Once a year?
Yeah. I mean, Fire Prevention Week's the first week in October.
Right.
And so we try to hit that, but that is harvest for a lot of our guys.
That's kind of why I like to get you in here in December, because you're done harvesting for the most part.
I just got a phone call from the local 4-H, one of the clubs, the Country Kids, and they would like to meet down at the fire station
cool.
Have an open house and learn, again, about fire safety and what's going on, and tour the station, tour the trucks and everything.
Derek's going to take your picture, by the way, while you're talking.
Okay.
You see now... And the other thing I was going to ask you about in training, you said that you have the training meetings every month. Who trains their trainers? Does David go to conventions or something?
Well, there's classes you can go to. Okay. So in late June, sometime in June, is the Illinois Fire Institute Service up in Champaign.
Right.
You see it probably when you go to the football game, the Burn Towers. They have training you can go to and actual fire college. And then you can also, they call it cornerstone classes. They can come down and present to your local department. In the past year, the city fire department hosted a LP burn.
Oh, really?
We went out to Farrington Farms and how you would control an LP tank fire.
I bet you learned a lot, dude.
Live burn. I mean, it.
Is that the best way to learn it, probably?
Hands-on is the best way, yes. Yeah. So, and when we got into the rescue tools, they came down and had some classes with that.
I like who decided to bring in the cars to destroy the cars? That's fun.
Yeah, we do it about once every 18 months or a year. I don't know if Chris set that up or who, but it was, it's good hands-on, and you always learn something, and that's a good time to find if something's going to fail, too.
Well, I guess that's what, you want to know in the training as opposed to having to fail on site, right?
Right. And, you know, it kind of gives you an opportunity to try different things.
Sure.
You know, those cars, I don't know where they came from. I'd say that they're, you know, engine and blown up. Or
sure.
They're going to go to the scrapyard when we were done with them.
Yeah.
And so that's what we just cut the windshield out, cut the doors off, made a convertible out of
just about ready to make a demolition derby cars.
We could. Yep, we could.
Well, that sounds like you got a lot going on.
It's, you know, it's fun, Bruce. We always look for new volunteers. Anybody?
I was going to say, how much are you looking for volunteers now?
Always looking for some. You know, we've call the station, 842-7995, and fill an application. Just because your application isn't taken right away doesn't mean we don't need you. It's just it's a fact of getting people in, getting them trained and fitted for gear, which is not a cheap thing to do. So we have to.
About how much time does it take to train a volunteer?
Well, it's kind of a lot of hands-on, and so, you know.
Depends how much you take to it.
That's right. And, you know, there's always the once you become a volunteer, you're given access to the station. So, you know, a lot of it's just going down and familiarizing yourself with the trucks and where things are at. And then, you know, whatever how much you want to put into is what you get out of it.
A lot of great information, Matt.
Thanks, Bruce.
Hey, thanks very much for coming on.
No problem.
That's the Bruce Dickey Show for today, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Have a great one.